Rolling Stone magazine has called Salman Ahmed the Bono of South Asia. He's the founding member and songwriter of the band Junoon, which has sold over 30 million records to date and sells out concerts not only across Asia, but also at London's Royal Albert Hall and right here in Central Park. In recent years, Mr. Ahmed has turned to advocacy work, trying to help reconcile tensions and misunderstandings between Pakistan, his home country, and the West. He's called his memoir Rock and Roll Jihad, a Muslim Rock Star's Revolution. It's published by Free Press. I'm very pleased to welcome him to our show today. Hi.
It's an honor to be on your show, Len.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, usually when rock and roll and jihad appear in the same sentence, it's because a jihadist has condemned Western decadence. What does the phrase mean to you?
So, first of all, the revolution is about guitars and roses.
Guns?
Well, if you grew up in Pakistan, when I grew up, I was born in Lahore. Jihad in Muslim culture or Pakistani culture is a word of self-improvement. Overcoming your limitations, overcoming your ego, not the word that it has become, which, you know, conjures up visions of violence and fear. And I think when I was writing the book and I was trying to find an apt title, Rock and Roll, the Passion, and Jihad, the Striving and the Struggle, I thought they describe my, you know, my cross-cultural upbringing the best.
Well, you write in the book about your formative experiences during the 1980s in Tappan in Rockland County. What had brought your family there?
So my father, for the longest time, was in the airlines. And in the 70s, when I was 11 years old, my father moved to Tappan, New York, in Rockland County. I went to junior high and high school. And it seemed like I'd landed on a different planet.
From Lahore to Tappan.
From Lahore to Tappan, 10,000 miles.
Would it have been different if you'd gone to a big city?
You know, yeah, because as you know, both of us coming from Rockland County in some ways, it's old town USA, and you know, there's a headquarters of George Washington there. So I was the only brown Muslim kid. In a junior high school of Irish, Italian, and Jewish kids. And so it's a huge culture shock.
But you became interested in rock music, although mostly older bands, Led Zeppelin, The Beatles, Jimi Hendrix.
Well, when you're a cultural outsider, you have no sense of what's old and what's new. So for 2 years, my best friends in junior high school were TV and radio. And I didn't venture out too much. I didn't have too many friends. I was overweight. And a friend of mine, Danny Spitz, he said to me, he said, Sal, if you want to be cool, brother, you have to go see a rock concert. And I bought a ticket off of Danny for a Monday night, a show at Madison Square Garden. And I didn't know who the band was, but I just knew that I wanted to be cool. So I asked my mother, I said, can you drive me to Madison Square Garden? And she said, you have to mow the lawn, and also if you do drugs, I will disown you. And so I was 13 at that time, and she drove me to Madison Square Garden. She forced me to wear a yellow floral shirt, a red and white striped pants, black boots, and a matching belt, because that's how Pakistani kids dressed when they went out. And so I arrived at the garden.
You stuck out like a sore thumb.
There were thousands and thousands of long-haired kids. This is the last tour of the band Led Zeppelin in 1977. I'm dating myself. But as I walked around, I saw torn jeans, long hair, peace signs. And then I walked in, and there was a haze of smoke, which kind of smelled funny. And for 1 hour, I just looked around like as if I'd come from Mars, and I'd landed in some beautiful, amazing place. And as the lights went down, I saw red, green, blue laser lights hitting the stage, and Jimmy Page, a guitar player, was playing a two-headed guitar, dragons painted on his pants. I looked at him and I said, I want to do that for the rest of my life.
So you took guitar lessons?
Well, not really.
Because there is a stringed instrument tradition in Pakistan, in India, in fact, all throughout the area. And there even are some connections between guitars and those stringed instruments. But you didn't want to go back to one of the more traditional instruments?
Well, the oud, for example, is the oldest, one of the oldest stringed instruments, which come from the Middle East. And, you know, the sarod and the rubab are all cousins. But here's the thing. If you grow up in Pakistani culture, the thinking is either you're born into a musical family, which has, you know, hundreds of years of tradition. They're called the gharanas. Linked together with lineage. But in my side of the, both sides of my dad's family, my mother's family, they're doctors. So ever since I was 7 years old, my mother would say, you're going to become a doctor, beta. And when I asked for a guitar, she said, well, you're in the States now. People, you know, kids work. They go and they save up enough money and they buy a guitar. So I worked at the Blauvelt Coach Diner for 6 months. At $125 per hour plus tips. And then I saved up about $200 and I said to my mother, well, I've got the money together. Can we go buy the guitar? So she had no choice but to take me to Sam Ash.
And you write about an uncle of yours, a surgeon, who came to visit and had a serious talk about your life plan.
I think that happened when I disappeared for 2 years during 11th and 12th grades. I wouldn't come out of my room. And my parents, who were terrified that I was being sucked in by rock and roll, sent in a surgeon. And Dr. Anwar, as I write in the book, he came into my room, which had posters of Jimi Hendrix and the Beatles and Led Zeppelin. And he said to me in this, you know, authoritative voice, he said, you know, Beta, what have you planned for the future? And I looked at a picture of, you know, Jimi Hendrix, and I pointed towards it. And I said, I want to rock just like these guys.
So, but you didn't want to play anything that related to Pakistani music. It was simply Western rock based on the Western musical concepts.
At that time, Len, I was trying desperately to fit into, you know, a suburban cocoon.
But you also, in Pakistan, in India, there is a popular music, usually based on movie music. Were you aware of it at all?
So I grew up in Bollywood music. You know, all of the melodies, the great Bollywood films of the 70s, and my mother used to take it to them. But here was the difference. The big difference was that we always considered that we are the audience and those are the performers. And you cannot cross that line. Ever since when I was growing up, I was told you're going to be a doctor. Why? Because nobility. You know, because of nobility, because of respect. And nobody will give you their girl if you didn't become a doctor.
Well, you wound up becoming a doctor. You went back to Pakistan and worked as a doctor?
I was sent back to Pakistan after my uncle said that this kid is going to become a Mirasi, which means a low-class singer, you know, low-class musician. So I went back to Pakistan, landed in the middle of a military dictatorship. It was like having Pat Robertson being a military general and ruling a country.
That was Zia's?
General Zia's time. And in those times, as I went through medical school, I graduated from medical school, but my passion didn't leave me, and I started a rock movement in Pakistan.
Well, rock based on, again, on Western musical structures?
So initially, yes, because it was cool to play like Bruce Springsteen and U2 and the Beatles, but I met Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan, who, as you know, is probably the most influential Sufi singer of the 20th century. And I collaborated with him, I performed with him, and he brought the element that was missing in my music, which was Sufi poetry, which is love poetry, devotional poetry, and also South Asian classical music.
I think his son was on our show, who's also a musician, and they were doing a tour a couple of months ago. You tell the story of attempting to play at a talent show during medical school, but a group of fundamentalist Muslims interrupted your performance.
Well, that was my welcome back to Pakistan. My initial gig was aborted. We had put together a talent show where if you could sing, if you could tell a joke, if you could do anything, you'd get a chance for 5 minutes of fame. So I thought I would play Eddie Van Halen's Eruption, you know, which is sort of a heavy metal guitar instrumental with finger tapping. And as I closed my eyes in front of my medical schoolmates, I heard shrieking and screaming. And I was telling myself they're loving this, you know? It was like Michael J. Fox in Back to the Future. But the difference here was that the shrieking was coming from the music police. They had gatecrashed, And they started screaming at everyone, saying, harami, harami, fashi, vulgarity. And one of them came and took my guitar, my Les Paul, and smashed it on the ground.
But you became very popular, despite all of that.
Well, following that humiliation, because as you know, rock musicians smash their own instruments. I thought that this...
It's a different... I think they smashed the cheap one that they brought along to be smashed.
Yeah, not the only one, right? They have. But I thought that this was going to be my jihad, my rock and roll jihad. That I went through medical college, I graduated, but underneath, as I tell in the book, we played in basements, we played in college dorms, we used to hide and play secret gigs, and we kickstarted a underground countercultural rock movement in Lahore.
Well, you've been censored, haven't you, in Pakistan and some other countries in the Middle East, and you are a devout Muslim. How do you reconcile your religious sense with the fact that it's religious people who are censoring you?
Well, as I tell in the book, that the religious, you know, quote-unquote religious people are looking for political power, and, you know, and for them, they, fatwa is a religious ruling. So they'll post a fatwa on anything which doesn't agree with them. So when they say no music in Islam, it's not the holy book that's saying them, it's them. And so... For me, I mean, I've read the Quran, you know, in translation. I understand. I grew up in a pretty, you know, conservative family. So there's nothing that says music is not allowed in Islam.
We heard that people were cheering on September 11th in Lahore. Did you, you had friends here as well. Did you have a sense of divided loyalties?
Well, he, as I write an entire chapter on that experience, that it's not true that that the majority of Pakistanis were cheering on 9/11. I think the majority of Muslims in the world were genuinely, you know, just shocked like everybody else. But what I found in my book is that it seemed like wherever you saw a bearded guy saying death to America, you know, that seemed to be the only voice which is, you know, on the screens. And I felt that there was a communication breakdown between the West and the Muslim world.
But right now there's still a sense that the way Pakistanis see things and the way people in this country see things totally divergent, despite the fact that Pakistan has had its own experiences with the Taliban. And you did. You went to the Swat Valley during your youth. I don't know. Have you ever been back since the Taliban have pretty much taken over the area?
Well, Len, here's the thing, that when the Taliban distributed a cell phone video of a 17-year-old Pakistani girl being flogged, you know, it shocked the entire nation. I did a concert at the United Nations General Assembly in which Sting, Deepak Chopra, Gavin Rossdale, Jeff Skoll all came together, because what people need to understand about Pakistan is that they are grinding cultural tectonic plates. Majority of Pakistanis are freedom-loving, music-loving, people who want democracy. Look, let me give you an example. 11 years of military dictatorship of General Zia, when we had democracy, who did the people elect into power? A 35-year-old Harvard-graduated woman in Benazir Bhutto. So that's their natural inclination. But at the same time, I don't want to, you know, just gloss over the fact there is a violent minority of extremists who want political power. And the Taliban and the Al-Qaeda, you know, They have their sympathizers. But I think if people power, if we support people power in Pakistan, you'll see a country which is a modern 21st century Islamic state.
You also performed at the Nobel Peace Prize ceremony in Oslo in 2007, where you met Melissa Etheridge. Is that what led her to wind up writing the introduction to this book?
Well, yeah. I mean, like, as I write in the book, you know, musicians, it's easy to see with the heart. So when you see with the heart, all the masks fall down. And at the Nobel Peace Prize ceremony, when Al Gore won the prize for climate change, Melissa and I connected at a sound check, and she invited me to L.A., and we just talked for 2 days, and we jammed. And out of that jamming, between a Sufi Muslim and a lesbian rock star from Kansas came out Ring the Bells.
And we'll be playing that to go out in this segment. You've been teaching a course on Muslim music and poetry at Queens College. Do your students realize that when you go back home, their professor is a rock star?
Some of them do because, you know, as you know, Queens is the most diverse borough, in the world. So it's a mini planet Earth of students I have. And some of them have come because of Junoon, and others have come because they're interested in learning about music and poetry.
So do you go back to the land of the Five Rivers anytime soon, Punjab?
I was there last week launching the book. And the conversation is very heated. You know, I don't pull any punches. And I say that if you have five Pakistanis sitting together, you'll have 12 opinions. But the fact is they have room for a rock and roll jihad there.
Salman Ahmad will be performing, reading, and signing books on Wednesday the 10th at 6:30 at M2 Ultra Lounge. That's at 28th Street between 10th and 11th Avenues. And we're going to go out with a song that he wrote and recorded with Melissa Etheridge entitled Ring the Bells. His book, Rock and Roll Jihad, A Muslim Rockstar's Revolution, is published by Free Press.
Whose God is God, whose light is light, whose law is wrong, whose might is right. Here we are.